Sumerian is the earliest language that is represented in cuneiform writing. And remember, Sumer is in southern Mesopotamia. The northern Mesopotamian culture of Akkad represents the Akkadian language, which also adopted cuneiform. And the two were used simultaneously. So cuneiform signs can represent both the Sumerian language and the Akkadian language. By the mid-third millennium, we see that writing is used not just for accounting records and bureaucracy, but in fact for myths, hymns, inscriptions, a much wider range of literature. And we'll discuss what that literature is in an upcoming lecture. As we think about a writing system, we should start to imagine who was reading these texts, especially now that there's a much larger range in texts. And this leads us to think about ancient literacy. Literacy, like population, is a very difficult topic to explore and to know with any certainty. Cuneiform was a difficult written script to learn. It would require years of research and education. It's not something that most people were able to do. Even rulers were not necessarily able to read and to write. When they do, they tend to brag about it. And since it happens pretty rarely, that indicates to us that most of our rulers who are tromping through the Near East were, by our standards, illiterate. We see at the same time that there are lots of monuments with writing on them. Does this mean that the viewers could read it? There might, for example, be at a temple or a palace some convenient translator or tour guide who could tell you what was written on a particular object. It doesn't mean he or she could read, just that they had been told what the letters meant. Whether literacy was widespread or not, it is very clear that writing as a concept was important in Mesopotamia, that it had a power. And the idea that it could convey information to an audience, an educated audience, perhaps this audience was only the gods, or perhaps the audience was intended to be future generations. Kings are always leaving inscriptions to kings who succeed them, usually asking them not to desecrate their grave. But there's this idea that writing conveys information, and this is what is most desirable about it. Literacy, no matter how widespread, was definitely tied to the city, where you could find scribes, schools, and education. So the highest literacy rate, and estimates range anywhere from 2% to perhaps 10%, that's the most generous literacy rate ascribed in antiquity, would be in the city. Let's end up by returning to the history of the translation of cuneiform. So we're now skipping ahead several millennia. You may recall that Henry Creswick Rawlinson was mentioned as one of the early discoverers of writing and the person who deciphered cuneiform after he transcribed and translated this 5th century BC monument in Iran. If a language is undeciphered, how do you know that you've gotten it right? Kind of an interesting question. Rawlinson was one of several scholars who was working on the translation of cuneiform. Remember, tablets were widely known in European museums. A German, Georg Grotefend, had successfully deciphered some words, usually those that were closest to terms found in the Greek historians. And he had done this in 1802. An Irish parson, Edward Hinks, discovered in 1846 that the cuneiform script used syllables rather than individual signs. And this was a key development in the decipherment of cuneiform. There was a great rivalry between Hinks and Rawlinson, and Rawlinson went to great lengths to make sure that Hinks didn't receive information. But the two did feed off what the other one had learned. And in 1857, there was a contest sponsored by the Royal Academy in which Hincks, Rawlinson, and others were set to decipher the same cuneiform text to see if they could come up with a real understanding of the language. And this was successful. So by 1857, it was clear that the cuneiform script was understood. We have seen how writing was necessary for accounting and bureaucracy. Along the way, we've talked about temples, and in the next lecture, we will look at how temples played a role in the economy and religious life of the city.